Howard Hamburg inviting you to share my podcast, Let Me Tell You, on the OG Podcast Network. What a good podcast we have. Former executive editor of the New York Times, who is shown the door in not such a nice manner, is going to tell all. What's the old great lady really like? An institution. Come explore the inside of the New York Times with us. Plus, I had a nice adventure. Daughter Lizzie and I went to Hudson Yards. Is it worth going there? Can anyone afford it? How do you really get there? Where do you eat there? What are you going to buy? All this and more on today's Let Me Tell You. I'm Jonah Hamburg. Welcome to Let Me Tell You. This is my original podcast, national, so we welcome you wherever you're listening and tuned in. And this is all part of our OG podcast network. So we always bring you interesting guests and share my week and information. And believe me, the city is booming. First of all, Macy's Flower Show. If you have never seen it, it is gorgeous. And this flower show is going to be up through Sunday, April 7th. And it's very different this time. It's going to be a whole world of discovery and space and adventure. They call it Journey to Paradisios. And it's quite wonderful. It's all about the cosmos, and it's just beautiful. And you know, this I didn't know, but it's not only here in New York City on Herald Square, but it's opening in Chicago and in San Francisco at the same time, which is good. So it's an extraterrestrial journey, which is really unusual, and you're going to love it, and your children are going to love it, and lots of events take place during the week. So it's fun to go. You're right in our neighborhood, too. This is where WABC plays house, just down the road a little bit. So it's nice because on 33rd and all those streets right there, the streets are closed, you know, when you go west. So you can sit on a bench, you can have a little snack, and just enjoy it. And Macy's is fun. This, I told you, is really quite spectacular. You know, and while this show is holding court in Manhattan, the Orchid Show, which is open through the end of April, is at New York Botanical Garden. And that's quite gorgeous. It's on Southern Boulevard in the Bronx. Thousands of orchids, really beautiful. And what we like to do is combine it. So we do the Orchid Show, which is amazing. And then we go to Arthur Avenue, one of the last thresholds of real Italian food, one little Italian grocery and market after another. And here's where we come home with our homemade manicotti and ravioli, our mozzarella. We buy it still warm when we get it. And I forget what you call them, but you know those little cakes that are red, green, all those? We have to ask our producer, Lexi, Rainbow what they're cookies? Called. Rainbow. I love them. And you never tasted them as good as you get on Arthur Avenue because they bake them right there. And we go to Madonna Bakery, we buy prosciutto, you name it. I can barely get myself in the car with all that stuff. And I wanted to tell you a couple of other things, which I know you're going to enjoy. We had a big week because Hudson Yards, which is an entire world in the city between 10th, well, actually, it's between 10th and 11th. And I came up, the easiest way to do it is to come on 11th Avenue and then just turn where it says Hudson Yards. And that's the amazing new development, including a dining hub, which they're hoping will take Manhattan by storm. And it's from 10th to 12th Avenue. So that's why I came up 11th and turned left. Came down 11th, rather. And so it's 10th to 12th Avenues. And it's between 30th and 34th Streets. They're hoping that the restaurants will be the big draw. And it's like a whole glass tower city. I have very mixed feelings about how it looks. I need to go back because my daughter Lizzie and I went to the opening. It was packed, honestly, thousands of people. So very hard to really appreciate what it is. Your initial glance, you feel like you're in a super mall. And don't forget, Manhattan does not have malls. So it's a mall unlike any mall you've ever seen. There's an art center. There's a whole set of galleries. There's theater. There's everything there. Most of the restaurants are in their own building. Believe me, a seven-story building. And they have a Spanish food hall called Mercado Little Spain. That's a big deal. And believe it or not, we were there and we couldn't even find it the first night. It was too crowded. There were too many people all around. Most of the restaurants are famous, famous restaurants with famous chefs and incredibly expensive. Except there are a few things like Maison Kaiser, which is all over the city now with its French breads and it's affordable. Shake Shack is there. I have to tell you that Shake Shack fried chicken is just too delicious. Really good. And Neiman Marcus is there. So, you know, it was unreal to judge anything on that kind of opening. They're going to have dining areas as well. Now, I often pop into the stores in Manhattan on Fifth Avenue to see what's going on. Sometimes you can even go to Bergdorf's or Barney's or Saks and hear a pin drop because too many people are shopping online. We don't want our department stores to go away. It's part of our culture, part of our life. So I wonder, in a little out-of-the-way location, who are the shoppers going to be? At Neiman Marcus, a great store. But what's it going to take to draw people other than tourists who are going to come once when they're in town to see it? The restaurants, I can't even tell you how many I want to go to. They're really good looking, a lot of these restaurants. And we have friends who open restaurants in there. So what I'm going to tell you what to do is we went into 15, which is where the condo is. Floor-to-ceiling windows. In fact, at one point, I had to go sit down because it was almost like you felt a little dizzy. We were up on like the 60th floor, 50th. It was just so overwhelming with these floor-to-ceiling windows here. There's an office building here at 30 Hudson Yards, a tower, which is the third tallest in the city. I mean, there's a lot to see here. And the condo that I went to was 917 foot tall, a tower into curved glass tubes with 285 homes. Corcoran, who is representing it, told us that the over 70% was sold already. So isn't that interesting? I wonder who buys them. Good place. You've got to go see it. It's definitely a new part, an exciting part of New York City. There's a lot to see, a lot to do, and I know you're going to want to. Thomas Keller has restaurants there. Milos is there. Hudson Yards Grill. Our friend Michael LaMonaco, this is his. David Chang has a restaurant. So there's plenty to do. Go check out The Vessel. It's the centerpiece. They're going to change its name. But it's a huge piece of sculpture that's garnering all kinds of controversy. And a performing arts center called The Shed. It's a great thing to do if you're in the city on a weekend. Go take a look, enjoy it. And then what we did, we walked out and we walked over to 10th Avenue and 33rd Street to get a cab to go home, because a lot of the drivers, taxis, car service, they don't still know where it is. But all this flower show with theater coming in, this city is a great place to be. But I want you to enjoy my special podcast, which is coming up right now, Joan Hamburg's Let Me Tell You. Thanks for being part of it. You know, it's interesting to me. I grew up in a home where we couldn't eat dinner until all the papers were consumed. And in my generation, there were papers. We had the Mirror, the News, the Post, the Times, the Washington. We had every imaginable paper. And my grandfather would hold court, and we would have to talk about the news of the day, including the stock market. So I've been very personally involved with the world of papers. I was really interested in Jill Abramson's story. And Jill, who is a very well-known journalist, she was at the New York Times. She was the first woman at the Times who served as the bureau chief, the Washington bureau chief. She was executive editor. And before that, she was at the Wall Street Journal. This is her second book, maybe third, called Merchants of Truth, The Business of News and the Fight for Facts. It is a large book. It's not an easy read all the time because it's a lot of information, but it is fascinating. And it's going to give you a firsthand look at this complicated, amazing world. And it's essential to our democracy. So what is the digital age doing to our freedom of press? As Jill Abramson pointed out a few minutes ago when we were talking, when Donald Trump is done, whether by his own ability to step down or by election or whatever, what's going to happen to all the babies who have grown up feeding on this? There's a lot to talk about, and the business of news goes on. So, Jill, what, 3 years of this book?
Yeah, I spent 3 years researching and writing and living through, you know, before I started the book, living through this very disruptive but so interesting transition from print-dominated right. world to a digital world where now like 62% of adults in our country get most of their news from Facebook.
Right. It's extraordinary. It's like telephones. Anyone under a certain age, landlines are extinct, like print. They don't get the touch and the feel and the need to inhale it.
Right. And the smartphone is the way, you know, many, many people, and certainly the majority of younger people, see the news and read the news, right? You know, on their device.
And Jill lectures at Harvard. Now, she also still is very involved in the business. She writes for The Guardian about politics. But after spending all these years talking to everyone, taking the heat, which we all thought would be behind you once the Times said, all right, we're going to replace you with a guy because you're tough or whatever. Why not? I mean, how many guys before you were not like that? And yet, is there a future after you've done it, analyzed it, looked back at it for the world of news? Without Trump?
There has to be. I mean, there's a human need for great storytelling and reliable information. As you pointed out a few minutes ago, reliable news is, fundamental to our democracy. And, not to get all highfalutin, but the founders protected a free press in the First Amendment, and it's first for a reason, because they saw, journalists as watchdogs against corruption and over-centralized power and, the possibility of, an autocrat coming to power in this country.
Right. I'm talking to Jill Abramson, her new book, Merchants of Truth. And Jill takes four different examples. There are more, but the major players are the New York Times, the Washington Post, BuzzFeed, and Vice. And I was explaining to my husband, because he saw me glued to the book, and I didn't want him to bother me when I'm reading it. So he says, "What's Vice?" I said, "Well, you're too old. I mean, this isn't your thing." He said, "Well, BuzzFeed." I said, "Have you ever looked at it?" "No." He said, "Why would I look at it? I've got the Times." He said, "I don't even like to look at the Post, but you love the headlines." I was fascinated by the rise of BuzzFeed and Vice and the impact that they had out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Jonah Peretti, who's the founder of BuzzFeed, and basically invented it when he was studying at the MIT Media Lab, and he wanted to know, how does information spread widely? How does news go viral? And, it began as academic experiments, basically, and then became, a website that had far more traffic than either the New York Times or the Washington Post, and grafted on to what was mainly, fun and games kind of stories.
Right, kids, right.
But a real news organization that has, a 20-journalist investigative
unit. And up
unit
for prizes and everything else. They've become really legit.
They have, indeed.
But you wonder, how does something like this happen? They hired kids, who had nothing to do with anything. Someone, I think I read, who was going off to study snakes or something.
That was advice.
Where did they all come from, and how do you take these kids and turn them into investigative reporters who actually have a finger on the pulse of America, young America?
Young America and different parts of America. The interesting thing about, we were talking about Vice a minute ago, is that, they were on to white nationalist hate groups really early. And that, positioned one of their correspondents well to be up close during the Charlottesville torch march, and someone got killed that weekend. But
Babe became the face of it.
And that their story, was just unbelievably great. And very frightening, but they set the pace on that story.
And a lot of these organizations are still making headlines and setting the pace.
But they're having business troubles.
Yes, money. And that's another huge issue which Jill raises in this book. And we know in our industry, none of us are different when it comes to that. Do you separate business from journalism or from broadcast or from anything? We're not in the advertising, although we really are in the advertising business, and we have to learn that.
And that business is in trouble, especially
everything's in trouble.
Digital advertising. My students at Harvard were asking me what I thought in this field of, is it how do you keep business and news separated, that a lot of the podcasts they listen to, the host of the podcast does ads for the sponsor.
Sure.
And that's going back to sort of the model of the 50s.
Right. Exactly.
When Ronald Reagan did, you know, ads for General Electric when he was host of GE Theater.
Yeah, no, and yet I remember in the early days, we had assigned disclaimers that we would not touch any of that stuff. And I remember that you can't take a gift unless it's $25 or under. Well, bye-bye to that.
I mean, the Times still has really strict rules about that. And their travel writers don't
can't
go on
take.
Junkets and that kind of thing. But you're right, those strictures have kind of washed away.
Now, I know I can't ask you to look in your crystal ball because we go through the rise and not the fall, because the Times and the Washington Post from near-death experiences are alive.
Yeah.
And well.
I mean, the arc of that narrative was just so interesting to research and amazingly fun to tell, because it's a happy ending, at least now,
at this point,
for two of the most important news organizations in the country.
Well, because those who were running them understood digital reality and other things, which is a hard thing to grasp.
It is. And the Times was slow,
of course,
to catch on. The culture was very ingrained as a paper culture. And that was true of the Post, too, where their whole digital operations was located across the Potomac River
in Virginia. You
couldn't mix. Right.
Yeah, they kept them all separate. They kept the journalists apart from the digital people. It was like, you know, the digital people are the clerks, put them away from the real stuff. And they learned the hard way that it's got to be a combo or it's not going to work at all. But Ben, when all is said and done, how do you cover a Trump? I mean, the big question which you address too is the Times really unfair to a Donald Trump? And is this going to hurt them or did it hurt them?
Well, I don't think anything about Trump's election has hurt the Times in terms of attracting many new paying digital readers. They witnessed an astounding Trump bump of several million new subscribers. But, you know, it's the whole news media is addicted to Trump, and he manipulates everything.
Yeah,
he knows exactly how to dominate micro news cycles. I mean, he can dominate all day if he wants to, beginning with his morning tweets and ending with, you know, saying something outrageous and provocative.
Knows.
He is, you know, he
a
knows.
Master.
He is, and I think he learned a lot of it from being on The Apprentice.
I agree. He understood social media. It was like raising money during presidential campaigns, not Trump. People were shocked that Obama raised all that money. Social media.
I think the bad part for the health of news about the addiction to Trump, both for news, for clicks, for TV ratings, is that it's made the press too reactive to him, I think. You know, I just have been annoyed all week because I want to literally see on TV and have deep stories about the border. I mean, it's just worse than ever. And, you know, everything was Manafort trial. And
exactly. And even worse, if we look today, and it's all about that. Even news that we think is so important, like the college scandals.
Yeah.
You know,
that is a story that I think has legs because it has famous people involved.
And it's just starting. We're just seeing the tip of it. Shocking, right? Because you have kids, I have kids. We went through getting them into school and everything else. Whoever heard of? I mean, everyone in New York City, if they could afford it, tried to have tutors.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything about give a building.
I didn't have tutors for my kids. They just took some, you know, test prep course.
Yeah, which they had.
You know, didn't cost anything like what we're reading about.
We didn't know about that. I told the story last night. My daughter reminded me. She was not a good math test taker. So I hired a math tutor, not bribe or anything, a math tutor who could up the math ante. So the bell rings, it's a math tutor. I go, Lizzie, the math tutor's here. Mom, I didn't know you were taking tutoring. Back in her room and slams the door. And that was the end of the math tutor. I had to pay her to leave. So we were in a different time.
Well, you know, that's a story with sex appeal. And, you know, because things are driven by clicks and ratings and, you know, Chartbeat, which measures what people are reading by the microsecond. The problem is that, you know, stories about the border are not going to explode the way a Trump story or...
And we're used to it. It's like almost too much. It's like the Mueller investigation. Do something, even if it isn't happening now.
It's been very hard to untangle all of the prongs of that investigation. I teach a course called Journalism in the Age of Trump, and it's been hard to simplify it.
Yeah, I'm sure. So tell me, the digital reality, when all is said and done, we still have these four players. Economics are now playing a bigger role than ever. Can they survive? Can the babies who grow up to be real threats hang on with all the costs? What do you see?
The babies are in big trouble now.
Because
of money. And basically, it's just
digital
advertising.
It's still paying
nothing. It's a pittance.
Yeah, nothing.
And none of them have established the kind of loyal readership that the Times and the Post have. The Times' majority revenue comes from paid circulation, digital circulation and print. And advertising is a much smaller piece of the revenue pie than it used to be. It used to be the big revenue, you know, generator. Not so now. So advertising is not a stable business model for anyone. And, you know, the new babies were all, you know, news wants to be free. That was the mantra of the web. Mm. So now they're looking for all kinds of different ways to squeeze some money out of their audience. And it's difficult.
It is, and it's going to be a very interesting near future as to see, can they hang on? And
they may have to merge.
Exactly.
Some of them.
That would be interesting. And what is, if they don't merge, what is going to replace them? What's the next step?
The next coming thing.
And
my hope is that it isn't the complete dominance of Twitter and Facebook.
Oh, no, we're sick of that already.
But Twitter basically has become the ignition system for news stories.
Where they're all going.
All reporters are glued to it, and boom, you know, if it's on Twitter,
it's there.
It's everywhere.
So, Jill, I'm talking to Jill Abramson, her new book, Merchants of Truth, The Business of News, The Fight for Facts. Jill also lectures at Harvard. She writes a column for The Guardian. Is this enough? What do you want to do?
What do I want to do next?
Uh-huh.
Well, like you, I'm a nana. I'm a grandmother.
Right.
I have two grandkids. And my daughter's a surgeon, married to a surgeon.
Right.
So they need help from nana, which, you know, I spend a lot of time.
You're so lucky. Mine lives in L.A. It's awful. It's too far.
Terrible. And, you know, I'd love to do another book, but, you know, I wouldn't want to ever do another book about the press.
It's time.
You know, I knew, you know, because, you know, I was a reporter for a long time. We are a thin-skinned group of people, and I knew for sure I'm going to make a lot of people angry with this book.
And they went after you.
They did. Vice in particular went after me.
Saying that the attribution of certain things wasn't real enough. Now, guys, I read the book. It's This is a very big book, loaded with facts, quotes. The back section, which attributes everything, is almost as big as the book.
There are 835 footnotes, and so, I was sloppy with six phrases, and I feel terrible about that. I want my work to be perfect. Wait, I corrected it. I called some of the writers directly to apologize. You know, I wanted to own it, but you know, the way it blew up into it was a lesson personally for me in what I was writing about, how things go viral so quickly.
Yeah, it's scary. Now you understand all the other things that happen in journalism when people are like, I didn't do that. You know, what are you doing?
But Trump has figured out the truth of all of this, mm-hmm. which is it blows up big and then it's forgotten.
Cares.
No, it's forgotten the next day. But so that's why he has something new, you know, three times a day.
No, it's true. And we all love to hate him, but he sure keeps everyone on their toes and makes it interesting.
Yeah, interesting, but really
scary
and upsetting.
Absolutely.
And the, you know, addiction to covering him all the time means we're not getting enough information about what's happening in all of the cabinet offices where policy is being turned on its head. I mean, what's happening at EPA, the Department
Everything
of Education, and, you know, the Times does cover these things, but it's just everything has the overlay of Donald Trump.
I know. It's a very complicated and difficult time. Read Jill's book, Merchants of Truth. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you so much, Joan.
We'll talk soon.